Hey everybody, we're going to get to the Raw review in just a minute, including my thoughts on the McIntyre-Seth Rollins contract signing, Apollo Crews getting the push of a lifetime, Zelina Vega, who continues to be the MVP of Monday Night Raw, and WWE's continuation of 25 years of Triple H. So we're going to get it all started right after this. Hey guys, not because you need to, but because you would want to, improve your weight room and bedroom performance with the all-new VasoFlux for Men. It's a natural dietary supplement. This unique blend of barks, roots, herbs, and vitamins is nature's way of keeping you in the game, and for under $10, you can order yours today. Just visit Youth Fountain Laboratory at youthfountainlab.com. That's youthfountainlab, all one word, .com, or call 1-800-853-7856. That's 1-800-853-7856.
Welcome to the WWE Podcast, the most passionate and authentic wrestling analysis on the web. We've got you covered with every Raw, SmackDown, and NXT show, giving you a no bullshit opinion. We know you love wrestling. We do too. So let's get this show underway.
And that's the bottom line. What? Because Stone Cold said so.
Hey guys, welcome to the WWE Podcast on this Tuesday, April 28th, 2020. And we're about to review Monday Night Raw. As we continue with these empty arena formats for the foreseeable future, rumors of reopening and, I don't know how true those are. States are continuing to open on their own and open to people's criticism, and then they're not opening soon enough. And then, look, the fact of the matter is, sports are going to be the last thing to truly come back, at least the way that we know them. So I don't really believe that we will see, my own personal opinion, of which may have value or not to you, is that we may by late summer see a full arena of fans. And that may be optimistic. It may not return until the pandemic is over and we have a vaccine and everyone's vaccinated. I mean, who knows? But I'm not trying to bring in the current environment into things, but let's face it, without an audience, it's sometimes hard to watch. And I think the wrestlers, the performers, let me call them wrestlers because that's exactly what they are. I think the wrestlers would agree generally that they would love to have a live audience. They play off them. Their characters are built around them. Their promos are built for it. Matches are built for it. The whole presentation of professional wrestling is built for a live audience. And when you take the soul out of a presentation like pro wrestling, it leaves it just with, sometimes it's hard to watch. It leaves it very bare bones, I guess, for no pun intended, but it leaves it sometimes uncomfortable. I think that WWE in general has done much better. And I think that the fans at home are getting somewhat used to now that we're on, 6-7 weeks of this, of no audience. And, it's not shocking anymore. It's just life. I don't think that things can be set any lower in terms of the bar. So this is something we'll get through. And by God, when we have a live audience, how much are we going to appreciate that again, right? And you can always go on the network or wherever and watch a match that actually has a crowd and then be fully invested into the match because it just makes you remember how much an audience gives and can take away from a match. So enough of that though. We're going to get to the Monday Night Raw review and just as a overall type of feeling I felt about Raw, I thought it was a good Raw. I really did. I enjoyed Raw for the most part. There were certain things that just don't jive with me, i.e. Having incessantly somebody who's in the ring at the beginning of Raw have to welcome you to Monday Night Raw. And why do we need to be welcomed to the show that we know we're watching and have been watching many of us for decades? I don't know. It's just some kind of corporate must do on their to-do list of everyone. I don't care if it was Kurt Angle as general manager, if it was God Almighty, the Authority, who did it every single Monday night back, 5-6 years ago, when that was a thing, a weekly staple of Raw, or now we have MVP doing it. Can we start out with something different? I mean, please, please. It just, you know, on top of that, you know, you have MVP feeling like he's reading lines. You don't believe me? Go back and watch. This is not a shot on MVP. He does what he's told. I get it. I'm a fan of MVP. I like that he's kind of getting rebirthed here in WWE, but the whole scripting of certain promos, it's very apparent when they're scripted. Very, very. I mean, look at Jerry the King Lawler, for God's sakes. He did the contract signing. Why is he even there, number one? I mean, I don't understand why Jerry the King Lawler is even on Monday Night Raw. I loved his work. I think the King was a huge asset to Monday Night Raw, especially during his golden era with Jim Ross. There's no doubt that he contributed a lot to this business and in the ring. But the fact of the matter is, we don't need a three-man booth, and now you have Samoa Joe back, which we'll talk about that too. But you have him there to fly into Orlando for what? To read a segment at the beginning of the contract signing? Anybody could have hosted that. Anybody. And again, I don't know the intricacies of this whole thing with Jerry the King Lawler in WWE. Maybe he and WWE have come to some agreement that he'll be there in some capacity, even if it's not in an on-air role to help with X. I mean, whatever. But my point is, circling back, that these red segments, and that's exactly what this was, it felt like Jerry the King Lawler was reading off of a teleprompter. Those aren't his words. Those are not his words. Go listen to it. Why? Why do I need to hear somebody read a line? I would not be surprised if there literally was a teleprompter behind the hard camera. It really felt that much like that. And so same with MVP. So those are really the two things I'm just like, wait, what? I mean, a couple of things I was down on were those things. And I'm not trying to start off in a negative note, but I do have a lot of positives to get to. A lot of them to get to. So don't think that this is going to be all, oh, you're too negative. No. I just wanted to get those off my chest because those are what's on my mind as we speak at this moment with Raw. But we do have a lot of good things that happen on Raw. Great wrestling on Raw. The building and rebuilding of new stars and existing stars. Jinder Mahal, Apollo Crews, to name a couple. So some mixed thoughts on those. And Andrade and Zelina Vega, who I'll get to in a minute too. Those are, you know, all the names I just mentioned there are positives, I believe. I really do believe that. But first, I'd like to welcome you to the show. Thank you so much for joining me. We are on this podcast feed, my God, 7 times a week, sometimes more with my quick hits. This is many times a 8 or 9 show a week type of podcast. And I think that's a good thing because we cover all angles. Yes, we cover AEW. I don't care that we're called the WWE podcast. You know why? Because I call the shots. This is my show. And we're going to cover a wrestling product that I think a lot of WWE fans watch. It would be stupid for me not to. So for those that feel like I need to be loyal because just to only WWE, because that's the name of my show, I think it'd be doing a disservice to everybody that watches AEW. And it'd be silly for me to not try to capture an AEW audience, right? It just makes business sense. So you'll get an AEW coverage. You get a solo SmackDown coverage. You get a Monday Night Raw review, which you're listening to. You have a wrestling nostalgia, which is tomorrow night. I haven't decided on the topic yet, but I'm working on it. And then Thursday and Friday, AEW and NXT. So, and then obviously the flagship show, which is on Saturday, which is the weekend review that covers everything that happened in this week in WWE. So there's a lot. There's almost everything and anything that anyone could want. What I don't provide and what I will be providing, and I know this is a glaring omission. Many of you are fans of the show, and I appreciate it. What we're looking into doing are more interviews because we don't do a whole lot of those. And I don't mean co-hosts. I have a great team of co-hosts. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about true interviews with wrestlers or those that may have exited the industry or current employees of a wrestling company. Now, does that mean we're going to get interviews with WWE talent? Very difficult to do. Very difficult to do. Why? Because number one, getting in a hold of them is difficult unless you have an insider in WWE. So not easy to get. Number two, many times they have to go through the corporate levels of approval. You have to go to the office, make sure it's okay. I mean, very unlikely that anybody is going to be going on a podcast without a office approval, because it'll get out on the internet and it'll catch fire like nobody's business. So obviously I would go for it, and I'm going to be making an effort to do so, but not easy. So it'll probably be maybe independents. It may be former WWE stars, maybe people that no longer employed by the business. A lot of different avenues we could go. So keep an eye out for that. It's an effort that I'm going to be putting into place really immediately and trying to lock down interviews and maybe taking up a wrestling nostalgia for an interview, interview Wednesday, or I'll come up with something. So just keep an eye out for that. I'm not promising anything right now, but if there's anything, any news, you guys will be the first to know. So I just wanted to point that out. Anyway, you guys can follow me on Twitter at the WWE Podcast, or you can hit me up on Patreon if you don't like ads and you're just like, get out of this, I can't handle the ads. Simple solution. Head on over to patreon.com and get your ad-free experience started right away. It's at patreon.com/WWE Podcast, and the entire library is available ad-free. Seriously, for a dollar. That's it. And you get exclusive content that I published several weeks ago, and you get a shout out on the show, much more available too as you go up in tiers. But anyway, let's get to Monday Night Raw, and let's start with what I thought and who I thought, again, was the shining star of Raw. And, well, I feel like a broken record coming on here every Monday night, every Tuesday night, and I think that's okay because we call it straight here. We have no affiliation with WWE, which means we don't have any vested interest in who we put over and who we don't. We can say whatever we want, but we're always truthful here. And with that said, I think Zelina Vega was the shining star of Raw. Again. I mean, the more I see her on my screen, I'm not getting sick of her. And you may say, oh, that's because you're a guy. No. Certainly, look, she's a very, very good-looking woman. There's no question. WWE knows this. She knows this. It is irrelevant to the point because, yes, she's good looking. And some may go, oh, well, that's great because she looks nice and I don't mind nice good looking people on my screen. But if you're a true wrestling fan, good looks go up in smoke real quick if there's no substance behind it. If you have a good looking person, man or woman, and they are just all sizzle and no steak, as JR would say, then it's very obvious and it becomes apparent quickly. So with Zelina Vega, she clearly has looks. Okay, let's get past that. But she also just emits confidence. Whether she's faking it really well or not, I don't care, because I believe what she's saying. I believe her words. I believe her selling at ringside during a match that she is with every move. And she doesn't oversell the moves. She just stands at ringside. She cheers on her business associates. I love how it's strictly business associates. It's no sexual innuendo. There's no, oh, maybe I'm hooking up with him. Maybe there's some kind of wink and a nod, or what are they really doing? No, there's none of that. None of it. And that's great. That's a very rare thing to have with an attractive female paired with a male that there's not even a hint of a story of something deeper. Is a relationship going on? No. There's none of that, which I think adds a lot to her character because she's all business. And I've said that too. But this just goes as part of Raw now that she is the glue that holds not just her team together, that she's building nicely and being the spokesperson for her team, which has yet to be named. I would like them to come up with a name at some point. I think it's important. But for now, it's just the unnamed trio with Zelina Vega as their spokesperson, as their brain trust, as their kingpin, whatever you want to label her as. And she's not just the glue of that group. She's the glue of Monday Night Raw. And you know, that's not putting down anybody on Raw. That's certainly not putting down Drew McIntyre, who I like as champion. I feel bad for that he's not getting the adulation of the fans that I think he deserves. No, that's not superficial. I think you live for that as a wrestler in WWE. Notice I didn't say performer. As a wrestler in WWE, you live for that. I don't need to be involved in the business to know that. right? I mean, so especially with Drew, you can tell it's genuine that he loves this business. So it's not to put down him. It's not to put down Seth. It's not to put down anybody in WWE right now that is getting a push or has been a mainstay or has veteran status. The fact of the matter is Zelina Vega being involved in so many segments now, she's not just involved in a quick entrance with Andrade at ringside, there to help him win, maybe does a Hurricane Rana and ends up leaving. No, they have really tapped into something here that is, I hope, a sign of things to come. And do I need to see her in six segments every Raw? No, I think eventually she'll wear out her welcome, but she's showing you right now what she's capable of. She's showing you that it's not just a pretty face for those that don't even understand that she has so much more to bring to the table. It's about her talent. It's about her presence, that X factor that we all know and talk about that you can't put a finger on that she has. And it's something that is often not able to be even taught. It's just either you have it or you don't. And Zelina's got it. And she is the glue of Raw. She's the glue of her team. And I've said this on my show with Mary this past weekend. I said, I could see Zelina Vega going very far in this business with even just being a manager and being that spokesperson and maybe taking a bump or two. But I think her real destiny, I think her real top of the mountain would be as a women's champion on either brand and a long running championship run as a heel. I think that's where the real money is for Zelina. And that's just me. I mean, this is one fan sitting here, you know, being a keyboard warrior behind a microphone. I guess I'm a microphone warrior. I don't know. But I do have a keyboard in front of me, so I guess I'm living up to the stereotype. I just really believe that she has her best days in front of her, not just as a manager, which she can go pretty high, but she'll hit a ceiling. And I don't mean the glass ceiling, folks. Okay, for those of you, oh, she's a woman. No. She's doing better than 90% of the guys in the business right now, in my estimation. I'm talking about a true ceiling as a manager. You can only go so far. Yes, you have the exceptions of Bobby the Brain Heenan, Paul Heyman, right? But you're talking about the elite of the elite. But typically, there is a manager ceiling that gets put on somebody as far as star power goes. Because you have to be in the ring to get the real full potential and feel the real potential and see what you can truly be. How far can you go? So eventually, maybe she'll make that migration over. We all know she can wrestle, right? We've seen it. We know she can. Athletic as hell. Great shape. So she'll be there. She'll get there. I just hope they don't overlook her as a woman's future woman's champion, as a long-running heel champ. Just a thought. Just a thought. And maybe it's Becky Lynch she eventually goes after. Just a thought there, too. So anyway, that again, those are my thoughts on Zelina just as a whole. And, you know, as we opened Raw, we got MVP. Again, a very, 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 very red script from MVP in the MVP, the VIP lounge. And he brings in all the competitors from Raw for the men's Money in the Bank ladder match that nobody can get right. I mean, in terms of describing it, nobody can get this right. Somebody, I mean, I think Jerry the King Lawler said that it's a Money in the Bank championship. And I believe MVP said it's the a opportunity to compete for the WWE title. Well, I mean, is it though? Right? Because if it's not, you have the SmackDown side that's going to compete for the Universal title. Nonetheless, I'm splitting hairs. But anyway, we got at the beginning of Raw, MVP bringing out the three competitors. And from there, it was kind of awkward. We got Aleister Black, Rey Mysterio, and Apollo Crews. And it didn't last long because we got the interruption from Garza, Andrade, and Austin Theory with Zelina Vega. And Zelina was basically implying that this is the future. You guys were the future at one point, and basically asking them to relinquish their opportunity for the ladder match at Money in the Bank. I mean, it's preposterous, but it's hilariously great as a heel to actually propose that. So again, I this isn't a entire show about Zelina Vega, but she's woven throughout the fabric of the show time after time. So we're going to have to talk about her time and again. It's just the way it is. So we got basically a 3-on-3 that ended in a extremely predictable 3-on-3 tag team match, a 6-man tag. Fine, whatever. Like, it's just WWE logic. So during the match, boy, oh boy, did we or did we not get a incessant push from the announcers, particularly Byron Saxton, who I mean, look, it's probably because, and this is not putting race on it, but the fact is that Byron Saxton, a black man, is putting over Apollo Crews, a black man. Do I think it's coincidence? No, but the thing is, I don't have a problem with it. I don't care. I think it's good. I like Apollo Crews. I just think that the heavy-handedness of putting over Apollo Crews that no one else ever gave a thought to for the last like 5 years, all of a sudden is the guy that is the favorite to win. I don't know. But nonetheless, we got Byron Saxton losing his mind over just how good Apollo is, and just, oh, he's showing what he can do, and I wouldn't, you know, he's my favorite to win. Come on. I mean, it's a little much to go from basically nothing to possibly winning the Money in the Bank ladder match, potentially winning the title. I mean, yeesh. Anyway, this was a very good match. It ended with Apollo, Aleister Black, and Rey Mysterio winning after Crews got the victory and pinned Andrade. So this was, I mean, shocking in and of itself. Given where Andrade was, losing here to Andrade, or losing here to Apollo Crews, no less, given where Apollo Crews has been again for the last half decade, it was striking, and I'm still not quite used to it. And maybe it's going to take time, but Andrade lost and took the pinfall. I mean, if you looked at this match on paper, you would say Apollo Crews has taken the fall, right? You would say Apollo Crews is there to take the fall, protect Black, protect Mysterio. And that's what he's here for. But no, Apollo Crews has just been, really, the last few weeks, been the focus of WWE. I mean, I don't know where this came from. And I don't have a problem with it. I'm fine with rewarding good soldiers, the guys that have been there for a long time that haven't really gotten a true shake at going to the top and seeing what they can do. I have no problem with this. This isn't a race thing. For God almighty, everyone's so sensitive today. It just, I'm fine with it. It just kind of came out of nowhere. It was like a Randy Orton RKO. It just was there. And Apollo Crews just starts winning and winning. It's like Popeye found his spinach. And fine. I mean, I'm along for the ride. I'm not against it. It's just striking, given where Apollo was. I guess you could say the same thing for Jinder Mahal, who also made an appearance on Raw and came out of nowhere and ended up challenging Randy Orton for the WWE Championship, and by God, he was champion. That I remember was very, very, even more so striking a few years ago. So, moving on here, we got Samoa Joe back, by the way, and I wanted to bring that up as well. Samoa Joe, we all know, was out for a injury, and subsequently to that, he was out because of a wellness violation. We don't know the details of it, okay? And when we don't know the details, people outside of the business, or sometimes even inside, especially fans, go, steroids! No. I can almost say for certain that the majority of those that are found with a wellness violation are not steroids, right? This isn't the 1980s. And yes, people are still using performance-enhancing drugs. But when we all think of steroids, we're thinking of guys sitting in the back with a needle, sticking in each other's ass, right? And you're the roid heads and the roid rage, all that kind of silly nonsense. While there, you know, maybe some type of performance-enhancing drug, steroids, still circulating around wrestling. It circulates around baseball, for God's sakes. It still exists. The majority of what we've discovered from these wellness violations are pain medications. Getting addicted to pain pills, it's probably a bigger factor and a bigger issue in wrestling than I think steroids are. I mean, do they exist still? Sure, I'm sure they do in some kind of form. But the fact is that these guys and gals beat the holy hell out of their bodies every night, 5 nights a week, sometimes more. And their bodies break down. And what happens then? You want to relieve the pain? You can go to alcohol, you can go to drugs, but more often than not, it's usually pain pills. Austin got addicted to them. He's admitted it, right? It's probably that. Again, I'm speculating, but for those that think it's all steroids, come on. Let's move on here. I mean, there's been no sport more riddled with steroids over the last 10 years than baseball, right? So those of you that think that wrestling is roided up, take a look at baseball for actual facts on those that have been exposed for steroids, right? So, all right, I digress. Okay, but it's good to see Samoa Joe back. I'm glad he's back in the announce booth. He does add credibility. He adds a veteran voice. It's interesting that he is just kind of transitioned back from Seth Rollins and his group beating the hell out of him to just kind of quietly being put back in the announcer's booth. I'm not sure if he'll stay there. I don't know what the long-term plan is for Joe. Kevin Owens is missing, among others. After WrestleMania, Randy Orton, Edge, all just MIA. They don't exist right now. Getting time off. And I'm fine with that. It's not a complaint or a slight. That's fine. That's good. I'd rather have them come back when there's an actual live audience. But Samoa Joe, do I know his long-term plans? No, I don't think anyone does. That's outside the company. But it's good to hear him back. I'm glad. I'm still not a fan of a three-man booth. I'm all about two, right? I mean, I don't know why there needs to be three. Threes gets very crowded. But I'm fine with Joe being there. It's good to see him back. And let's all move on. Let's all move on. Okay, then we got into the Triple H moments. And Todd Phillips said that the 25-year celebration of Triple H continues here on Raw tonight with the top 10 defining moments of the Cerebral Assassin. I can't speak tonight. Cerebral. Jeez, my cerebral isn't working. So, Triple H, we got moment number 10. March 1998, Triple H formed the second version of DX. He's got two words for you. Okay, this isn't a nostalgia type of show, but I just want to touch quickly on each moment. Number 10, I remember that. I remember that was the night after Austin beat Michaels at WrestleMania 14, and Michaels went off to basically find himself, find God, heal his body, and he didn't fully come back till 2002 to face Triple H at SummerSlam, which... that was a hell of a match too. I mean, the comeback of HBK is something to behold. But I remember that night, and it was Triple H taking the throne, no pun intended, from HBK. And it was Triple H's defining moment as the leader of D-Generation X. And I remember that very fondly, and I think it does belong in the top 10. So credit to WWE. All right, we're going to take a quick break, and then on the other side, we're going to get to Triple H moment number 9 with his Triple H's fight against Sting, right? That many people were not happy of the outcome with. And so we'll get to that. And then obviously tons more to get to with Monday Night Raw, including more about Zelina Vega and Charlie Caruso and Angel Garza, this kind of budding romance or just lusting type of connection that these two have, and more on Apollo Crews and his injury and him crying, which I've got something to say about that for sure. So stay right here. We'll be right back. Hey guys, not because you need to, but because you would want to improve your weight room and bedroom performance with the all new VasoFlux for Men. It's a natural dietary supplement. This unique blend of barks, roots, herbs, and vitamins is nature's way of keeping you in the game, and for under $10, you can order yours today. Just visit Youth Fountain Laboratory at youthfountainlab.com, that's youthfountainlab, all one word, .com, or call 1-800-853-7856, that's 1-800-853-7856.
Welcome back to the WWE Podcast. Let's get back to more great wrestling audio.
All right, guys, let's get to that number nine moment that WWE put up as the number nine moment of Triple H's career, and that was Triple H against Sting at WrestleMania in 2015, where DX got involved, NWO got involved, and kind of a mess of a match. It really didn't make a whole lot of sense with NWO coming to Sting's aid, given the storyline in WCW at that time. That'd be like that'd be like Stone Cold coming to Vince McMahon's aid if the heel turn never happened. I mean, it's just like, wait, what? That doesn't make any sense. But it was all just because they're under the brand of WCW, right? Whatever. So Triple H ended up hitting Sting in the head with a hammer, sledgehammer, and finally putting the longtime rivalry to end. What longtime rivalry? Did Triple H and Sting have some kind of personal rivalry we didn't know about? Or are they just trying to put WCW versus WWE as the cover of that match? We already got that with the Invasion. I don't know how Triple H versus Sting represents WWE versus WCW. No, that doesn't. If you wanted that, you wanted to embody it in two guys? If you wanted to embody WCW and WWE in one match with one-on-one, there's only one way to do that. And that would be Stone Cold Steve Austin versus Hollywood Hulk Hogan. That is the only way you would get a true embodiment of that of that picture. Otherwise, you're selling me a bill of goods I don't buy. But let's move on. This isn't a nostalgia episode, but boy, it's so easy to go down the rabbit hole, isn't it? And then they shake hands at the end. I mean, maybe, you know what? I'm getting the itch to just do this tomorrow night for a wrestling nostalgia. Triple H versus Sting. And just go through the litany of things that just make no sense. On top of it, Triple H wins the damn thing. In Sting's only match in WWE up to that point. What? And then they shake hands after Triple H used a sledgehammer in the head to beat him. They shake hands. Why? Good grief. Okay. I'm going down the rabbit hole fast, folks. Okay. Then we got a backstage segment here with Charlie Caruso, who also probably got as many times on the cam as Zelina Vega did. I mean, she was the only interviewer there, and for good reason, obviously, with the restrictions going on. But she walked up to Andrade and asks what went wrong in that match, and Andrade put the blame on Garza in theory, saying they let him down. And Andrade continues on, and Apollo Crews. He states Apollo Crews can't beat him in a singles match for the championship. After Apollo Crews steps into frame after that, and he said he couldn't help but overhear the complaining that he's a sore or a poor loser, whatever it was. He says that he beat Andrade once. He'd be happy to show everyone he could do the same thing twice in one night. They're just not ready for me. And Andrade comes back up. They get into a little bit of a scuffle after Crews slaps Andrade hard, I mean really hard, in the face. And then Vega says that they're on, and he got lucky after one match. Boy, I will say, Crews got, he came off a little bit heelish here. Crews did not come off likable. He came off as kind of an arrogant punk that got lucky in a match, just as Zelina said. And then got overconfident and slapped the champion. I mean, Crews, I don't know what to make of him yet, because I don't think he knows what he is, right? Crews has never been in this type of situation in his career where he's being put in a fairly prominent position. And he's kind of acting overconfident, unlikable, yet the narrative that's being told to me by the announcers when they're calling Apollo's matches is that he's an unsung hero, and that he could be WWE's next big star, and that he could win the Money in the Bank ladder match and all these things. And do I buy it? I mean, I don't know. I'm just I don't know. I just don't know what to make of Apollo, and I'm willing to give it a try. I think he's a great athlete, as we've all said a million times. Potential, 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 potential. That is what. That's the definition of Apollo Crews, is potential. So we'll have to see where this goes. But okay. Then we get moment number 8. And this was the first SmackDown main event Triple H went and main evented this first SmackDown in August of 1999 with a WWF championship match against The Rock with Shawn Michaels as the referee. Boy, oh boy, do I remember this. Anybody else remember this match? It is stuck in my head forever because of how angry this made me. And when I say angry, I mean that in a great way, because I don't feel this way a lot today. And that is invested in a character I love in The Rock against a guy that I can't stand in Triple H. And you have his best friend as the referee who's claiming to be impartial. And The Rock hits the Rock Bottom, goes for the People's Elbow, and bam, Michaels hits The Rock in the face with Sweet Chin Music, Pedigree, 1, 2, 3, and still your WWF champion, Triple H. It was a great, great main event that made me angry. Now, it didn't put a smile on my face, but you know what? I still came back and invested my money to see The Rock overcome Triple H. Doesn't always have to be a happy ending to get a just to get people invested. You get people invested by playing with their emotions, not just giving them the predictable same emotion of, well, the good guy's going to win here. Well, how do you know? Why not give him a swerve every once in a while and build up to that moment instead of just so concerned about that superficial smile? I mean, I'm going to go on a rant. Okay. Then we get another commercial break. And we got moment number 7, which was Triple H in 2000, July of 2000, backstage with Trish showing her how to get out of a move. And Stephanie walks in. We've all seen this one before. And it was just well done all the way around. I mean, it does belong in Triple H's top 10. It's funny. I remember watching it, Stephanie losing her mind. It was all well done by everybody. So I have nothing really much to say about that. Okay. Then after the moment number 7, we got the women's triple threat match with Asuka, Shayna Baszler, and Nia Jax. Now, they advertised this the first half of the show. And when they advertised this, I said,
What?
No, but really, I did. And I was thinking, did I miss something? Is this something that was advertised last week and I missed? Is this a pay-per-view match that maybe they're telling me that it's on a pay-per-view, not Raw? But no, it was advertised for Raw. And the reason I was so perplexed by it is this is a main event pay-per-view. I mean, this could main event a pay-per-view if given the right story. I mean, you look at this and it's like, why are they putting these three together? I don't want to see them together until the Money in the Bank. And yes, we didn't actually get the match, which I was pleasantly surprised about. This was nothing more than just a brawl. There was no point to even putting in this triple threat match at all because they could have just had them coming out, cut promos, and then brawl. I mean, this is a little bit more of a creative way, so I guess I'll give them props for that. But the fact is that when I saw this, I was very confused because why would they give this away unadvertised it was unadvertised up until the day of, during the actual show, as far as I know. It was very striking to me that they were going to give that triple threat match up with none of these women having any prior Raw programs together. They just threw these big women stars together unannounced and they were going to have a match. But it was just a brawl that ended up making Nia Jax stand tall. And she is supposed to be, I guess, the favorite. That's what I would assume based on the way that this whole brawl went. Asuka's promo was probably the most I understood of her promos in the last 2 months, which was nice to hear. Shayna Baszler kind of stalled this week, which I was a bit disappointed about. Having her not break somebody's arm, which was a little bit disappointing. I do like the fact that she does come out and just break people's arms now, and that got stunted this week with just nothing happening. other than them brawling and Nia Jax standing tall. So take that for what it's worth. Apparently, you need momentum to win the belt. See, they got me screwing up. To win the briefcase next Sunday. Apparently, you have to build momentum. Without momentum, guys, I mean, you're not going to be able to win. Momentum. Take that word out of their vocabulary, for God's sakes, please. Momentum means nothing in wrestling. Zero. You know why it means zero? Because you've told us, and or no, you've shown us it means zero by telling us it means something, ultimately to have that person who, quote, had all that momentum lose the big match, right? Momentum also during a match, if you're looking at it on a much smaller scale during just an individual match, not even the length of a program, just an individual match, the momentum that they tout as such a big deal and building, you gotta build it, means nothing because in about 20 to 30 seconds, you can guarantee yourself that the, quote, momentum, I don't even think they really know what that means, is going to shift the other way because that's how a wrestling match goes. God, can they please just remove that from the vocabulary of the announcers? For God's sakes, please. Okay. Then we got Bobby Lashley winning against Denzel Dejournette, who just continues to be an enhancement talent on Raw. But we got a segment backstage with Lana talking and hyping Lashley, and Lashley walks in and tells Lana he would prefer she didn't accompany him to ringside, and she looked offended, asking why. He says that she's a distraction, and he says she's too beautiful. Her eyes, her legs, he isn't able to focus. He then heads to the stage as Lana is smiling like a giddy girl and stands backstage. Okay, so here's the difference between Zelina Vega and Lana. Both extremely attractive women. You could argue they're on the same level. One's a blonde. Well, Lana was a blonde. And one's a brunette. Much darker hair. But generally, I would say, in the same wavelength of, like, jaw-droppingly beautiful. Great. Wonderful. But here's where that ends. The similarities end between these two and the differences begin, because Zelina Vega has a much deeper character, a much more, I think, poignant, articulate character on the microphone, and this is where Lana becomes a sex object. Lana has been now defined down to a sex object. End of subject. Right? I mean, do I need to say more? Okay. So, after this match, I mean, I don't even know what to say about Bobby Lashley's win. I mean, it's just, it doesn't mean anything, honestly. It really doesn't mean anything. We got a Liv Morgan and Ruby Riott match. And this one ended up seeing Liv Morgan come out on top as she hits her finish for the win. Oblivion, I guess is the name of it. And after the match, Liv Morgan says that she feels like a lot of people her age. She's just trying to figure out who she is and what that means. But she's confident that she will figure it out. Boy, lots of figuring things out, huh? I mean, so wait a minute. You're telling me that Liv Morgan, the one that left the Riot Squad, I remember the day she left, she said, I'll be back. I'm going to be somebody different. Basically, I'm changing who I am. And we get these vignettes that talked about who she knew she was and that she found herself and her confidence, blah, blah, blah. And all of a sudden, she just lost herself again. She has no idea who she is. And it's not a good look, right? I mean, Liv Morgan's going in circles. I don't know what direction this is going. I think the star here is going to be Ruby Riott. Ruby Riott, to me, is the star of this. Liv Morgan is, I'm sorry, she's. I think from, again, fans' perspective, she looks like she's serviceable in the ring, but Ruby Riott is the star. Liv Morgan is kind of eye candy at this point. I mean, I don't know what Liv Morgan is. I'm not saying she should be let go by WWE. My God, I'm just saying that to me, the star here is Ruby Riott. I believe that, even though Liv won here. So, okay. Then we got a Nia Jax promo, which just talked about, basically saying no one can do anything about my actions. I mean, it was effective. I think it was effective by Nia Jax. Viking Raiders had probably their longest promo to date, talking about the Street Profits and challenging them next week to a Raw tag team title match, of which the Street Profits did accept. So that was nice to see the Street Profits, or I'm sorry, the Viking Raiders, and really the Street Profits getting promo time to build up their match for next week. That was nice to see. All right, then we got another, good grief, another Triple H moment. And this time, it was Triple H winning the 1997 King of the Ring, which certainly was significant. I just had started watching at that point, like barely just started watching. And you all know that I started in really late summer of 97 before the Hell in a Cell with Michaels and HBK, or Michaels and Undertaker. But certainly a big moment, and I don't really much more to say about it. It was a defining moment. And that's pretty much it. I didn't really understand it at the time how big of a moment that was. This is back when, don't forget, this is back when King of the Ring actually meant something, and they actually, you know, used that as a momentum builder. God Almighty, I said momentum. But okay, moving on. The next segment we got here was Jinder Mahal. That's right, he's back, and he faced Akira Tozawa in essentially a squash. So Jinder's back, folks. I don't know what to say. I'm scared too. I'll leave it at that. I mean, all right, moving on. Then we get a Triple H again, a top moment. And this time, if I'm correct here, we got Triple H, was it? Oh, Forming Evolution. I think that's what it was. Yeah, Forming Evolution. I remember that night too, back in February 2003. Flair, Batista, Orton, and himself, right? And it was a hell of a group. Anybody that doesn't remember Evolution, please educate yourself. I mean, it was one of the best factions in WWE history, especially given the star power that came out of that. And the two guys that were meant to be built from that, which is Orton and Batista, certainly got their shot at being a star and took it and ran with it and became some of the biggest stars in WWE history. So, all right, moving on. Again, it's really hard for me not to make this a nostalgia episode. Very, very difficult. Okay, then we ended up getting the Andrade and the Andrade Apollo Crews United States Championship match, and this was a very good match. These two, I really like their chemistry together. It worked very well. They worked very well off of each other. They were physical. They protected their calls. I didn't hear anything they said in the ring. And the believability, they took me in and made me believe in the moment. And they made me forget about the crowd not being there. That's, again, such a big thing right now. And when I don't know that or think about the crowd not being there and just crickets, it's distracting. But these two guys did a great job. So props to both to Cruz and to Andrade for putting on a hell of a match, ultimately ending in an injury stoppage. And I was a bit disappointed by this because I wanted a finish, but I was also scared of the finish because, to me, I did not want to see Andrade lose twice in one night and also lose his United States Championship to Apollo Crews, a guy that really, I'm not sorry because this is my damn show. The guy meant next to nothing for Monday Night Raw. I mean, let's be honest. He was not involved in anything significant. His on-air character was non-existent at best. So the fact that he would have come and taken the belt from Andrade, a guy that has really been, you know, I think a very good United States champion, has shown you what he can do in the ring, obviously with Zelina there, and having Drew McIntyre run through that group a couple of weeks in a row, they needed to not lose here and hold that gold, and they did. And so having Andrade retain, although not of his own accord, I think is a positive. Now, Apollo Crews got injured and the referee stopped it, right? And you want that as a babyface to make sure that if you stop a match, it's not because the babyface told you to. It's because the referee made his own decision to stop it. Now, I mean, God Almighty, we all know that the referee stoppages have been a very sore talking point for fans after the Hell in a Cell stoppage in October, which I still don't understand. But you have the ref stop the match here because Apollo can't continue. He can't even stand. And then Apollo backstage is in the trainer's room. Charlie Caruso catches up with him and then starts basically weeping. I mean, you went from this overconfident, arrogant guy that slapped the champion in the face to, "Man, I lost my child." What? I know we're supposed to sympathize. I get what they were going for, to humanize him, feel sympathy. Stop it. I don't need to see a grown man cry. Okay, I don't need it. So you got injured. We've seen injuries many times. And you could say, oh, well, this is the biggest opportunity in his career. He'd be emotional. Great, he would be, but I don't need to see it. Seeing it, I think, diminishes his character because he looks like a crybaby. Remember when Kurt Angle was on the crybaby run? Actually, it was pretty damn entertaining. When he would cry after he'd win a match, which, again, that was funny as hell, and also obnoxious. It doesn't work for a babyface to see him cry in a moment that is not worthy of crying for. If he won a major championship and were tears of joy, fine. But I don't need to see him crying. I mean, come on. Please. Please. All the good they did just was undone in those few moments. So, on top of that, Apollo Crews is out of the Money in the Bank ladder match next Sunday. Now, that would mean, and WWE put a statement out on this, that would mean that in storyline, because this isn't not a real injury, that they have something bigger planned for Apollo Crews. Probably a rematch for the United States Championship. That's likely what it's going to be at Money in the Bank. With him and Andrade, that's probably where they're going. So they're only taking him out to put him in a more prominent position rather than having him compete in the ladder match and end up not winning it. So to me, that's where they're headed, of which they might end up stripping the belt off of Andrade and giving it to Apollo, who they suddenly are just in love with. I don't understand the there's just out of nowhere fascination. Don't know if it's because they just want to try and build a new star, reward a guy that's been there, combination of both, they see something, blah, blah, blah. I don't know. But I just hope they think long and hard about this decision before they take the belt off of Andrade, who has done a great job as champion, I think has more in him, especially with Zelina. You just formed this new group. You want the group to have gold. You need the group to have words that carry weight and are followed through on, not just Zelina Vega cutting great promos. Y'all know I love her. I just talked about her at the beginning of the show for 20 minutes praising her. I don't need all of that undone and lessen the weight of the words of Zelina by having Apollo Crews win and having this trio lose and lose and lose and lose. This trio needs to go on a winning streak in a big way. Capture the tag team belts. You know, maybe Andrade goes for a major championship, one above him, tries to challenge Drew, although right now Drew is untouchable. I'll be honest with you. After the struggle Drew went through, the fan support he has, the win at WrestleMania against Brock freaking Lesnar, clean, that belt isn't going anywhere. So I would actually take Andrade and keep him way away from Drew McIntyre right now. He already went and mowed down the three of them a couple of weeks in a row. So I would keep him away from that. Right now, I would just continue to stack up wins. And I think that Andrade and that group needs the belt more than Apollo Crews, who comes out of nowhere and is now challenging for it, assumingly, at the pay-per-view next Sunday night. So to me, the greater good is having the belt help elevate. I know it's supposed to be the other way around where the guys make the belt, but in this case, if you need the belt to add a little bit of oomph to that group, then so be it. To me, that's the greater good than having Apollo come out of nowhere and win. I don't need a Jinder Mahal situation. But again, he's back too. So, okay. So we go from the crybaby to the Cedric Alexander and Ricochet win again. They're continuing to just gel like peanut butter and jelly. And I'm fine with it. I think they are doing a very good job quietly putting together a strong tag team. And Lord knows WWE needs tag teams right now. Okay, moving on here to, let's see here. We're closing out Raw almost. So the top two moments for Triple H when he invaded WCW with the tank. We've seen enough of that. I mean, my God, over the last week, we've seen enough of that footage. And then the number one moment was his return in the Garden in 2002. And I agree with that. That was his biggest defining moment of his career, because it was such an organic reaction to a massive heel that left to a embraced babyface upon his return. That showed you respect. That tells you the fans have a lot of respect for you when you leave as a hot ass heel and you come back as a babyface, the biggest babyface in the company, to that reaction. It just speaks volumes. Okay. So Jerry Lawler comes out again to a very, very scripted red promo. And then Drew comes out for the contract signing. Seth comes out, and Seth says he doesn't want to do this. He has to do this. And he admits that he started it by jumping Drew to get the WWE Championship where it needs to be. And he says that this is bigger than all of us. And Seth claims that Drew will be a great champion someday. But he doesn't want to happen what happened to him, which is why it's his burden to carry. I love how Seth frames this. He's trying to tell Drew that what he is carrying around is a burden, and that Seth is willing to help him and take that from him to carry that burden. It's such an a-hole thing, a sly car salesman type of logic to put on him. Great stuff by Seth. Seth's delivery lately has been very good, whether it's in his backstage promos, now in-ring promos. It's not the Seth Rollins of old being a Messiah. It's now the Messiah being the Messiah, just being kind of quiet. He slowed down his pace. He has almost gone psychotic now since losing to KO at WrestleMania. He's kind of slipping in more and more into this, into his own reality. And that's the descent of his mind is really the story being told here. The delusion that Seth Rollins has is becoming quite entertaining. And Drew obviously they end up in a brawl. Drew starts to tell Seth that, yeah, you're right, you know, you've made things clear. And then they end up brawling. And really the big sticking point is here that we had Murphy return to help out Seth Rollins, and then he ends up eating a bro kick to Seth Rollins escaping. So it's nice to see Seth has a disciple back. I'm sure ALP will make their presence felt maybe at the pay-per-view, maybe sooner, maybe next week. But Seth needs his group. I mean, he is a leader, and he needs to show that he's a leader. And I think he'll do that if AOP come back, but I just think he needs a group to lead, and having him out there with no backup. Heels need backup. They need people to take their falls for them, do the dirty work. And that's why I loved Seth's group. And hopefully this is the start of it returning. I don't know why it got disbanded. Nobody knows. Murphy just went away, lost his first name, came back. And then the AOP, I believe there was an injury or two. Hopefully they're healed in time for Money in the Bank, but we will see. So, again, guys, overall, I thought this was a good Raw. I'd give it a B, a very strong B. Zelina, the glue. We had Drew and Seth, short and sweet. We had a couple of red promos. We had great wrestling, especially the United States Championship match and the six-man tag. Easily the best matches of the night. And yeah, I think that there will be much more to come from these three. And I hope they get on a winning streak. They need it. And we'll have to see. But anyway, guys, that's my Raw review. I hope you enjoyed it. This was a fun time. I always love talking wrestling. Well, really to myself, because no one else is here. But I hope you guys enjoyed the show. I know that this is not for everyone's taste. But hey, this is what it is. It's not a state-run radio show. This is not affiliated with WWE. So we say and do what the hell we want. And that's the beauty of it. So don't forget, tomorrow, we'll be back with Nostalgia. Thursday and Friday will be AEW and NXT. And then on Saturday, our flagship show with the weekend review, I believe Ashley will be joining me on Saturday. So that'll be a fun time as always. Don't forget to follow me on Twitter at the WWE Podcast. I'm going to be trying to working on getting more interviews this year. That's my New Year's resolution for this show, is to get more damn interviews and not just co-hosts, but true performers, true wrestlers that are in the industry or have been in the industry prior. So those are my resolutions to you guys. And one last thing before we go, I want to get this this audio clip in, which you guys can send in too at realwwepodcast@gmail.com, where you can send in your voice, your question, your comment to me, and I'll answer it on the air. So right now we're going to go to Mimi from Connecticut, who has a question for me. So let's get to that. I'll answer it, and then we'll close out the show.
Hey, Matt. I listened to what you said about the Firefly Funhouse a bunch of times, and in agreement for the first time when I watched it, I wasn't a fan, but when I went back and watched it, like Mary Grater said, I found all the little things that I really wasn't paying attention to, because, like you said, I just thought it was an acid trip from the beginning and kind of tuned out. But the thing I hated was the Boneyard match. I thought that looked like a poor action movie produced by WWE Studios. And I'm curious, though, what your thoughts are if they did something with the Firefly Funhouse match or something like that with Braun Strowman, if they didn't call it a match, but something along the lines of, like, Bray Wyatt's Nightmare, or I don't know what they would do, but because, like you said, there it wasn't really a match, but it was cool to watch. So, you know, I wonder if there's a compromise in between the two things of sports entertainment and wrestling. Thanks. Hope everyone's staying safe. Bye.
All right. Thanks, Mimi. Wow. Yeah. So I don't know why everyone's driving. I feel like every time I put a clip in, everybody's driving. So if you're driving, please stay safe if you're recording and sending it to me. But so, yeah, if they to call it a match is insulting to what a match is, right? And maybe I would have been more open to it had they not actually billed this as a match. If the sale of goods they were trying to sell me didn't have the words match in it, perhaps I would have been a little bit less negative on that segment. And yeah, I'm sure if I go back, you're absolutely right. I'm sure if they went back, I would pick out nuggets and go, oh, I see this. Oh, that's clever. And I'm sure I would, but I don't think that would help in my overall view of it, because we were supposed to believe that this was reality, that John Cena had no control of his body. This is the problem I have with it. It's not about the creativity of it. It's not about the Easter eggs they put in it. It's about believability, which has always been at the heart and soul of what wrestling is and what makes wrestling great. So you're absolutely right. I'm sure if I went back, I'd go, ooh, clever. Ooh, I get that. Ooh, I see that reference. That's wonderful. That's great. It's clever. But the problem is it's so overshadowed by how unbelievable it is and conceivable it is, even in the crazy, insane world of pro wrestling, to believe that Bray Wyatt not only has telepathic powers, he has the powers to be able to possess people. John Cena is somehow transported into many, many worlds of which he has no control of himself in. It just, that's the problem I had. It's not even the messages and the hidden stuff and all this. You could sit and dissect this thing for days and weeks, right? And I'm sure you'd find things and connect the dots and you'd find the genius in it. And that's wonderful. I just can't get past the presentation of it and how unbelievable it was and how we're supposed to just take it seriously. I can't. So it's interesting to hear, though, that you didn't like the bone. You liked the Boneyard match less. And it was a poor man's produced cinematic fight. That's what it was. It was a poor man's Hollywood. That's exactly what that was. And I was a little higher on that than I was the graveyard or the Firefly Funhouse match, because of the fact that the Firefly Funhouse wasn't even a match, right? As you just said it. Maybe if they called it the Firefly Funhouse Experience. I don't know. Like you said, the Nightmare. Fine. Great. Just don't call it a match. That's insulting to what a match is. I mean, if they just made this a WWE film, great. I would have, then fine. You're on the right platform because that's a film. Not a wrestling match. But you're going to get me ranting again. But thanks, Mimi, for the question and the comment. And stay safe driving. Those of you that record and drive, please stay safe. But if you want to get on the show just like Mimi did, email me, realwwepodcast@gmail.com. You can send it to me directly from your phone. Just create a voice memo and email me the file. Alrighty, well, guys, thank you so much for joining me. Hope everyone's staying safe and we're getting through this. And before you know it, this will all be over, right? I hope. It's been 6-7 weeks for many of us, but we're all here together. I'll be here every step of the way for your wrestling reviews and thoughts. So thank you guys for joining me. I'll talk to you soon. Hey guys, not because you need to, but because you would want to, improve your weight room and bedroom performance with the all-new VasoFlux for Men. It's a natural dietary supplement. This unique blend of barks, roots, herbs, and vitamins is nature's way of keeping you in the game, and for under $10, you can order yours today. Just visit Youth Fountain Laboratory at youthfountainlab.com. That's youthfountainlab, all one word, .com, or call 1-800-853-7856. That's 1-800-853-7856.
Thanks for listening to the WWE Podcast. Don't forget to subscribe on your favorite podcast app so you don't miss a show, or head to WWEPodcast.com. And for all of these shows ad-free, head over to Patreon.com/WWE Podcast. Until then, we'll see you next time.